This is All of It from WNYC. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart, who's on medical leave. Let's continue with another insightful installment of our series, Mental Health Monday. Today, we're going to delve into a topic that affects so many, but too often goes so unnoticed. We're talking about loneliness. Just last year, the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, referred to loneliness as an epidemic, citing the devastating impact it has here in the United States. And joining us is primary care physician Dr. Jeremy Nobel, the founder and president of the Foundation for Art and Healing and its signature initiative, Project Unlonely. He's also on the faculty of the Harvard Medical School and the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and recently he published the book, Project Unlonely, Healing Our Crisis of Disconnection. It offers a roadmap to reclaiming our sense of connection. Now, what we would love to do with listeners is open up the phones while we're talking to Dr. Nobel, and we would like to hear from you about if you've ever felt lonely. What did you do about it? Are you facing challenges to make meaningful connections today? And are you outgoing or introverted? And are you doing something now that's working for you to feel less lonely? So tell us your story. Give us a call or send us a text. The number is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can hit us up on social. We're at All of It WNYC. And joining me now, happy to introduce Dr. Nobel. Hi, Dr. Nobel. How are you?
Hi, Kusha. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Pleasure to have you. So can you help us understand loneliness just at the start? You hear offhand comments about feeling alone, like, oh, I'm bored and alone, or I'm feeling a little lonely today. But for the purposes of your work, what do you define as loneliness, and how does it differ from, let's say, social isolation?
Such an important question. I think one of the things that I've learned in the process of writing my book that you mentioned, thank you, Project Unlonely, is that there's a lot of loneliness illiteracy out there. So one of the purposes of the book is to demystify and humanize loneliness so we can make sense of it. So one of the most important things is to know that being lonely is not the same thing as being alone. Being alone can be such a positive experience, in touch with thoughts, feelings, understand how you fit into the bigger human story, that we have a high class word for it. We sometimes call it solitude. But being lonely is very different. It's a gap. It's something missing. It's the desire we have for a level of social connection to others that we feel we're missing. And it can have very significant mental health and physical health consequences, which is why the Surgeon General, I think, did us all a really great service by calling it out as a major public health crisis.
You know, you mentioned the side effects, or I guess the negative outcomes that can happen as a result of loneliness. And you have so much experience as a physician to offer on this subject. And in your book, Project Unlonely, you write about your observations as a physician working with patients that have serious illnesses or ailments. How often did you see insufficient connection, that idea of loneliness as you're describing it, actually leading to negative outcomes on physical health?
Well, I think disconnection, that sense that we don't have the connections we want or are troubled by something that we can't quite put our finger on, but when you track it down, it points to disconnection, is extremely common. And it was common even before the pandemic. I think what the pandemic did was two things. First, it shined light on loneliness because we were experiencing it mostly because of our being isolated to protect ourselves from getting sick or to protect our friends and neighbors. But it also reduced the stigma around saying you're lonely, because we were isolated and lonely, not because we felt we were unworthy or flawed or inadequate, which is still many people have that sense about being lonely. We were lonely because we were doing something to support others. It was even heroic to say you were lonely because you felt aligned with the public needs and others and supportive of important goals. So I think for this window of time now, we can say we're lonely. And that, just saying it out loud, can be one of the most important things to begin that little journey of connection.
Why is that so important? That's something you mention a lot in the book. Can you break that down a little bit?
Well, as I mentioned, for many people, even saying the words "I'm lonely" is very difficult. It kind of, they think being lonely is their fault. They think it means there's something defective about them, that otherwise, if were different or fixed, they would have abundant social connections of the type they imagine and aspire to. As a result of that stigma, they back away from exactly the kind of connections with each other that can be rewarding, motivating, and inspiring even. And what could be just the twinge of loneliness, which could be a very human feeling, starts to spiral out of control. And that is the big risk. Loneliness spiraling to very high levels of disconnection, lack of self-esteem, negative health habits, addiction, and so on. And that's what we have to be on guard for.
In your book, you mentioned three distinct categories of loneliness. There's one, psychological loneliness; two, societal loneliness; and three, existential loneliness. Can you break down those three? What are the differences between each?
Absolutely. So this is all part of the loneliness literacy part. So as I started trying to make sense of loneliness myself about 10 years ago, I realized that the common sense thinking about loneliness, psychological loneliness, do I have a friend, a confidant, someone I can tell my troubles to, what was very common, but there were other types too. There was the sense of being systematically excluded by other people because of some characteristics or a trait. So whether it's race, gender, disability, the feeling that if you imagine you're entering a room filled with people, that your arrival may not be welcome, expected, or safe. That's a very different kind of uncertainty about human connection than do I have a friend? And the third type of loneliness, spiritual or existential, may be in some ways the most intriguing and certainly very relevant to our current times. When you ask yourself, how does my life fit into the bigger human story? Does it have meaning? Do I matter? Does my life have consequences? And of course, we could have all three of these types of loneliness or none. And so part of the journey to being unlonely, if you will, is to recognize the types of loneliness, ask yourself the questions about how they feel to you, what's your experience, and develop the skill, the motivation, and confidence to navigate them all.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Jeremy Nobel. He's a primary care physician and public health practitioner, and turns out award-winning poet. Love to hear more about that in a second. He is also the author of the book Project Unlonely, Healing Our Crisis of Disconnection. And callers, we want to hear your stories. We'd like to hear from you. Do you consider yourself outgoing or an introvert? And in that subtext, how are you making meaningful connections with new people? Have you ever felt lonely, and what did you do to ease that feeling? Or if you have questions for Dr. Nobel, we're here for that too. Give us a call, text us. The number is 212-433-9692. It's 212-433-WNYC. And Dr. Nobel, we just got a text that came in and it reads, "Getting a radio has changed my life living alone. Being able to turn on and connect via the feeling of live broadcast makes me feel connected. Weirdly so has live TV. Watching sports has had the same effect for me. I feel a part of a greater community." And, you know, a lot of people watch sports around the globe. Loneliness affects a lot of people. It's said that about 1 in 4 adults say they're lonely. And, you know, when we look at diseases, there are a lot of risk factors. Could you go into some of the risk factors that you would define for loneliness?
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, one of the challenges with loneliness is it's very personal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with how we make sense of the world and what level of connection is truly satisfying for us. So people often think, well, I'm feeling lonely, I need more social connection. And yes, that can help with connection or help with loneliness. But there's also a different way to explore loneliness, which is to ask yourself, what kinds of connections do I most need? What is most satisfying for me? What is it that's driving my sense of needing to be more connected to other people? Is it something personal? Is it an experience I went through that was traumatizing or difficult that makes me feel uncertain about my self-worth? So you need to be flexible in exploring loneliness from multiple perspectives. And that's why I've found that one of the most interesting ways to do it is through creative arts. So the arts can change our brains, change our minds, and change our behaviors, all in ways that make it easier for us to feel more connected, not just to other people, but to ourselves.
Is that part of the reason why you started Project Unlonely?
It very much is. So Project Unlonely is exactly that. It's a project. It's part of a larger nonprofit effort, Foundation for Art and Healing, whose mission is to explore, celebrate, and engage creative expression as a path to health and well-being for individuals and community. I started the foundation 20 years ago when we were all recovering from a very different trauma than the pandemic. It was the trauma of 9/11 and very simple creative activities. Asking people to draw what was on their mind and then talk about it had tremendous, tremendous positive benefit in helping people deal with stress and anxiety. And so we thought, wow, this is so interesting, so important. How do we expand that? And so we began to develop arts-based programming that was really focused on trauma and trauma recovery. What we didn't know now, is that much of the stress and burden of trauma is related to loneliness. And trauma forces us into a defensive crouch. We isolate ourselves because we don't want to get hurt again. We become very uncertain about how much to share, expose, how to be vulnerable. And so without knowing it, our arts-based activations actually were making people feel less lonely and more connected. And when we discovered that, we pushed all our proverbial nonprofit poker chips to the center of the table and really started focusing on loneliness. This was about 10 years ago, and that's how Project Unlonely got started.
And what we're going to be doing in a second is opening up the phones to give folks an opportunity, as you're saying, Dr. Nobel, to find the community or the kind of connection you're saying that they might be looking for. So listeners, we want to hear from you. If you have a story or an insight to offer or a question for Dr. Nobel, give us a call, send us a text, 212-433-9692. We're going to get to those calls, dive in more into the book that you've written, Doctor, right after this. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar, and we're joined by Dr. Jeremy Nobel, the author of the book Project Unlonely, Healing Our Crisis of Disconnection. And listeners, we're taking your calls about loneliness. Call, give us a text, hit us up on social. The number is 212-433-9692. Our social handle is at All of It WNYC. Dr. Nobel, we have some callers ready to go. Let's hear from Rachel in Manhattan. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I spent most of my life as a painter, which one does in solitude. And I wanted to say that that's very, very different from being lonely. I'm 89 years old. I grew up in a very large Jewish family in the South, and many, many cousins, two older brothers, very close, always together. And I am the last one left. Everyone has gone. And I miss terribly the connection, the visits and the phone calls where we laughed so much. And there's, I simply have no one to reminisce with.
Rachel, thank you so much for that call. And, you know, Dr. Nobel, you hear Rachel talking about this idea of, I suppose, being a survivor and not having the connections that she says she used to love and enjoy. What does that bring up for you? Any experience dealing with folks that are experiencing this type of loneliness?
Well, a few things. First, you know, there are many what I call territories of loneliness in my book, in which the kind of loneliness and challenge Rachel is describing often appears and starts to spiral out of control unless you can get a handle on it. And, you know, Rachel is describing very articulately the territory of aging. And aging is a time for many. It's a mixed experience, right? Yes, we do experience loss in aging. We lose good friends, as Rachel mentioned, family, our support network. We often lose our biologic capabilities, vision, hearing, cognition. But we often also gain a certain perspective on the human situation and an eagerness to articulate that. And I'm imagining that Rachel, as a painter, uses her creative work to do some of that exploration. And in that way, she actually does stay connected to the bigger human story. Mm. Now, there's no replacement for actual human connection, in my opinion. And yet, to stay vulnerable and active and connected, as Rachel obviously is, sharing her personal story on this radio, connects her to us, and it connects us to her. Now, there's a lot of guidance out there about what older adults could do. Fortunately, New York City is rich with opportunities. There's an organization called DeRote, Upper West Side, initiated but now operating across New York, that for 40 years has been working on programs that feature intergenerationality. So incredible humans like Rachel can share her life story, often with younger people who we know from research are the loneliest demographic, even lonelier than older adults, in ways that they both can be connected.
And so that intergenerational connection goes a long way, it sounds like you're saying.
Absolutely, because what it allows people across the lifespan to do is put their personal experience, whether it's loss, whether it's illness, whether it's being discriminated against, in the context of a bigger human story, a bigger narrative in which they can locate themselves, others can locate them, and you can have a meaningful conversation, as your prior speaker mentioned, where listening is as important as speaking.
And I just want to point out, someone just texted offering a phone number for folks, maybe Rachel, who need to be connected. Don't know what we're going to do with that, but I just want to point out, Rachel, if you're still listening, one, thank you so much for the call. Two, as I think Dr. Nobel was just alluding to, there are resources and there are people. And just thank you so much for everybody participating in this community we're trying to make right now. Let's go to somebody else. Brian, hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Yes. So to follow up with Rachel's phone call, I work in a continuous care retirement community, and I'm responsible for their educational and cultural programming. And this year, in 2024, we are focusing on Dan Butner's the Blue Zones, areas across the globe where people live to be centenarians at a higher rate than others. And one particularly fascinating area is Okinawa, Japan. And through studying and learning about them, we learned about the concept of Moai. I think it's spelled M-O-A-I, and that is your tribe, your people. And I want to say that in the short time that we've done this, just January through April, I have seen in our community people being way more intentional about, hey, let's grab a cup of coffee. Hey, I know you play bridge. Let's play together. Can we take a walk on the trail today? Or so I see people recognizing that importance and acting on it. And I'm really, really proud of us on staff and for our members who are taking advantage of it.
Brian, thank you so much for calling and for adding that aspect of it. You know, Dr. Nobel, we're hearing some people, yourself included, talk about strategies that we have. We have a text here. It reads, "Something I struggle with is being vulnerable without being negative or unloading my problems. Any advice, as vulnerability is an important part of forming strong relationships and community?" What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a very common feeling that if I reveal myself, what if people don't like what they see and abandon me? What if my situation becomes worse? What if I become lonelier? And in my experience, while obviously we're always at risk for being judged and somewhat critiqued by others, the much greater likelihood is they'll find something common in our story that they'll relate to. I love what Brian referred to, the Blue Zone research, and then the recognition that small groups of engaged, vulnerable, interactive people sharing their lives and their work with each other actually sustains us. And what I'm very optimistic about, it has an expanding effect in those people also contributing in other ways to community health and wellness. They start to volunteer, reach out, engage with others. And so it's critical that we begin to understand that our concerns, our anxiety about disclosing ourselves to others, if we can tolerate even briefly the discomfort of that disclosure, almost everyone finds there are enormous rewards ahead for them.
And we just got a text that touches on this point. It reads, I am a 9/11 World Trade Center survivor and can confirm that PTSD or depression want you to be alone. Loneliness is where they thrive. Decorating became my passion after 9/11 as a way to deal with emotions in a creative way that helped me reconnect with myself. This is from Daniel in Staten Island. Daniel, thank you so much. Dr. Nobel, like you were mentioning, finding those strategies to find the kind of connection that you need, whether to other people, whether to art, seems to be crucial. We have a caller who has a similar thread going on here. Craig from Morganville, New Jersey. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I grew up in New York, but I live in New Jersey. When I was younger, a lot of my friends moved away to different parts of the country, so I was a little bit alone. And I was always a big museum person. I went to lectures, and I met some people, and I was able to connect with a new friend group, volunteer someplace, maybe at one of those adult community places. She can teach painting. Go to the 92nd Street Y. Go to a lecture to a subject that you would never even think about, and it might spark your brain to think about other things and ask questions and talk to people. And first thing is, you got to get out of the house. But volunteering, maybe go to a community garden. I mean, I know you're 89, but there's still stuff you can do there, So.
Yeah. Craig, thank you so much for that call and those strategies. It's really heartening, I got to say, listeners, to hear so many people calling in with questions and also with strategies that I think, like you were saying, Dr. Nobel, that feeling of making yourself vulnerable, but then having someone on the other end or something on the other end that makes you feel held is crucial. As we're wrapping up here, what advice? You've heard a lot of advice from folks. What are some practical steps that individuals can take to combat feelings of loneliness in their own lives, especially in today's fast-paced, I would say, digitally driven world?
Sure. And I think the first step is to think about, change your perspective. Sometimes perspective governs our behaviors in ways we're not fully aware of. And the perspective that loneliness means you're defective, deficient, something wrong with you, is not a helpful perspective. I like the alternative, to view loneliness as a signal. Just like that there's something you need. Just like thirst is a signal that you need hydration, you need water, loneliness is a signal that we need human connection. Now, very few people feel embarrassed about being thirsty. Why do we feel embarrassed about being lonely? And the answer is it's a social cultural construction. Here's the good news. Anything that's culturally constructed can be culturally reconstructed. So when I hear Craig and Brian and Rachel with their enthusiasm to connect, taking the time to call in, I become very hopeful that we can shift from feeling that loneliness is this dark place of spiraling lack of confidence in the future of the world, lack of self-esteem, thinking we're flawed and broken, to turn that spiral in the other direction towards optimism, empathy, serving others. And I love the fact that Craig mentioned that there's civic infrastructure, whether it's museums, libraries, even coffee shops, where we can play out the simple drama of looking someone in the eye and asking them, how are you doing today? And you'd be surprised at how that can invite a tremendous sense of connection, because people will respond, because we're all human, we're tied together by that need to connect, and the arts become an incredible catalyst for that, however we can find them and however they make sense to us.
Dr. Jeremy Nobel is the founder and president of the Foundation for Art and Healing and its signature initiative, Project Unlonely. He's also on the faculty of the Harvard Medical School and the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. His book is called Project Unlonely, Healing Our Crisis of Disconnection, which presents a roadmap to reclaiming our sense of connection. Dr. Nobel, thank you so much for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. I feel incredibly good after this wonderful sharing by your terrific audience.
Wonderful. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. There is more All of It on the way. The vocal trio Tiny Habits is currently on their first North American tour. Right after this, they join us in Studio 5 for a live performance. This is All of It.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.